The events in this book, unless you are remarkably well preserved, my friend, more your father or grandfather's time.
I was born in the early 70s, so people of my generation, really, although we never lived through those times, we were born in the shadow of those times. So our parents had lived those times. They were very fresh in their memories. So we really grew up in a time of recovering from great political and social upheaval and a lot of violence. So in a sense, although I had to do a lot of research for the hard detail of the book, like I had to get the political details right, I had to get certain historical facts right. There's a sense in which the anxiety and the fear and the uncertainty of the characters was something that I didn't have to research because I lived with it as a child.
This is where I have to display my gross ignorance. My only real knowledge was the movie, Year of Living Dangerously.
In fact, that was a wonderful movie. It was a really, really good film in that it captured the atmosphere brilliantly and it captured the sense of political confusion. Nobody knew who the enemy was, and the enemy came from within, and it was everyone. No one knew what was going on politically. There were so many forces at work. I mean, people nowadays forget that Indonesia is one of the great battlegrounds in the Cold War. And Sukarno played off the CIA against Moscow and Beijing. He was taking money from everybody. And towards the end, when we reached 64, 65, he's no longer able to keep those forces in balance. So the army, the religious elements, the communists, I mean, they're all, he's been courting all of them from the start, and now things are beginning to go off the rails, seriously off the rails. And what this means for the common person is that they're living in a country which is basically anarchic. There is no leadership and no clear direction as to where to go. And so the characters in the novel are living in this time of huge uncertainty. Everyone knows that something big is going to happen, something big and really quite bloody is going to happen. But they don't quite know what that thing is going to be yet. So although the Year of Living Dangerously itself, afterward, the end of the Year of Living Dangerously, 65, 66, involved huge bloodshed, we're now living, the characters in the book are now living in a time that senses this, but doesn't yet know what it's going to be.
And into this mess, you throw pretty much a complete innocent.
You know, particularly at the time, there were a lot of innocents who got caught up in that whole mess. And his name's Adam. He's 16 years old. He's already been abandoned a couple of times in his life. He was abandoned at birth by his biological parents, whom he's never known. He grows up in an orphanage with his older brother, Johan, from whom he's then separated quite traumatically at the age of 6. He's now living in Indonesia with his foster father, who's a Dutch painter, who's then taken away as part of the last drive of repatriation of Dutch people in Indonesia. So he finds himself alone and has to venture to Jakarta. He's lived in a very idyllic seaside village. And so he has to venture to Jakarta to try and find his adopted father. And as he does so, obviously, questions of identity arise. He meets lots of people who try and help him in some way or another, but they all help him out of some pre-existing agenda. They all have an ulterior motive, no matter how articulated that ulterior motive is. So he's pulled in lots of different directions. He doesn't really know what to do. For the first time in his life, he's confronted with having to make a choice himself.
Given the history and the colonialism, the white characters come off actually pretty well.
It's not a classic post-colonial novel. I think my characters in general are all, you know, whether or not they're white or Indonesian, they're all quite mixed up. And they're all quite, and which is putting it nice and putting it mildly, they're all quite mixed up. They're all very fragile in some ways. They're all very vulnerable. They're all trying to find their place in the world. They can also be quite, I don't know, they objectionable. That they have questionable ethics, or they're not very nice. They're quite abrupt. But at the same time, I think it's their vulnerability that they that bonds them. They're all vulnerable in some way or another. And part of the reason why I wanted to draw characters who are, you know, who are complex in that way is that firstly, obviously, it's a novelist's job to draw characters who are complex and who resist stereotype. And secondly, I think it's just too simplistic to set in a post-colonial novel that explores independence after many years of post-colonialism. I think it's quite simplistic to set Indonesian characters in direct opposition with European characters, because things just weren't like that. I think Southeast Asia and the West have a very, very complicated relationship. It was a very messy relationship, particularly at that time when they were trying to disentangle from each other. There were a lot of people who had a lot of sympathy for the other side, and yet a lot of the time that sympathy came from a very misguided view of the other. So, you know, in a sense, I just wanted to show how, you know, the characters relate to each other in a very complex way, because a lot of the novel is about how we look at other people and therefore how we look at ourselves.
The book is Map of the Invisible World. I've been speaking with the author Tash Awe, and Map of the Invisible World, published by McClelland and Stewart.